Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Performance Pad Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Park, and this is episode number one of our new Coach Welfare series. This series of interviews will be focused on all things coach welfare and well-being. In our first episode, I got a chance to talk to an excellent performance coach in Josh Fletcher about performance practitioner well-being. I hope you guys all enjoyed the show, and I'll chat to you very soon.
Folks, welcome back to the Performance Pad Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Park. Folks, it's been an absolute age. I know I keep raving about this. I'm going to get back on the horse and all this kind of stuff. But we're back, and I am thankfully joined by a pretty cool coach, Josh Fletcher. Josh, thanks for joining me, man.
Thank you very much for having me, and welcome back to all the listeners.
I'm kind of excited now to talk to you, Josh, about a few different kind of topics, and some, I would say, fairly pertinent topics. As well, when it comes to, I suppose, practitioner wellness and coaching welfare in general, and I suppose just quality of life when it comes to all of us as coaches or practitioners in the, I suppose, performance space. But to get it kind of going, and I suppose I know I've kind of listened to another podcast you were on recently, and you were saying that, like, if I got through your actual experience level, I mean, we could be here for a while, and those little intros and stuff can be interesting, but, and I'm not, you know what, I'm going to take it off your hands for a second, because I'm like, this is so mad. I'm like, I'm looking through some of the actual companies you've worked for, and I'm like, okay, Hintze, Science for Sport, Exos, Bradford Bulls, English Institute of Sport. I'm like, that's a pretty serious background, dude.
Yeah, I broke in when I was about 26, and I targeted three companies in my career that I wanted to work for. Didn't know how, didn't know when, didn't know where. And I called them the big three, and that was the English Institute of Sport, Exos, and Hintze. So now I can successfully retire. Now, if I had the money to, I possibly would. No. So now I'm not lucky, because I've engineered and I've grown and I've worked my balls off for this. So all of it comes for a reason. And I've really networked and tried to apply all of these principles and theories that I talk about to myself, and it's all kind of come together. So yeah, it's weird and wonderful. And I've been really deliberate about everything I've done in terms of creating a life and career that's weird and wacky and taking me all around the world. So yeah.
Nice. So I suppose we'll kind of get into it. To reiterate, like, the variety of experience that you would have, I think, would help an awful lot. How old are you actually, Josh?
36 or 30 plus a bit, thanks.
So I'm actually, I'm always older than people these days. It's mad. I'm like 41 and I don't know.
It's a fan, yeah.
Yeah. But so, with that level of experience and your current activities, I found it really interesting. So you would have put quite a focus on, I suppose, the topic of career periodization, or at least the blueprinting and mapping out of your career. And obviously we'd look at your career and kind of go, wow, that's a pretty interesting map, and you've been well-traveled. But I was thinking a good bit about the career periodization and, well, first of all, I suppose, which of those kind of roles in the last number of years would you have found that would have really kind of triggered you towards this idea of periodizing your career, and even just focusing on the actual wellness of practitioners or coaches?
So I guess, yeah, there's quite a couple of different things to unpick in that. So the reason why I probably ended up where I am now and doing what I'm doing, which is, I'm calling myself the practitioner wellness guy, because I'm solely focused. My sole business interest is to promote performance practitioner wellness, which is happiness, health, and wealth, are the pillars, in my opinion. And it comes about because I've been a Lone Ranger for just about all of my career. That means I've had to do everything on my own without a mentor. And often without a manager, I've been the only guy there. So obviously I've been the head because I'm the only one. I could give myself my own title. But that is probably both my biggest strength and my biggest weakness. I'm one of those guys that learns everything the hard way and learns really tough lessons by like really, really screwing things up over and over and over and over and over. And what I've really learned, and I posted something recently on Twitter or yesterday, which we were just talking about, which is that the majority of mistakes I've ever made were people problems and relationship problems. And that directly relates to my communication, my attitude, my ego, myself and my approach to a certain situation. So I've been wanting to help people and practitioners a lot. And I've only ever been really good at two things is what I say to people. Number one was logistics. So managing and organizing like carnage sessions with 180 like special forces operators and things like that. So I'm pretty reasonable at that. And the other one was helping other coaches to improve and get where they want to be. And I've been racking my brains as to how I could do that. And essentially it's come down to the fact that I want to use my experiences and my scars, my not always positive experiences that have taken place in the industry to help prevent other people from having the same things happen. And it's not N equals one. These are experiences that happen over and over and over. At 31 years old, I burnt out. I absolutely hit the wall. I was completely gone. I was mental and physical wreck, mental, physical and emotional wreck. And I was a shadow of the person that I was before and that I wanted to be. Between the ages of 26 and 31, I really can't remember a great deal of positive things that happened in my life socially. And that's really sad. I wish that I had somebody giving me the guidance to say, slow down or chill out, or, you know, if you want longevity in this industry, then you need to back off a little bit and you don't have to do everything at once. You can have anything you want. You just can't have everything. And why does our careers have to be any different how we map out an athlete's career? We map out an Olympic athlete's 4-year cycle, what competitions they'll go to, what they won't, with a goal of getting them to, we don't know what they're going to do in 4 years' time. Maybe they've got potential to get a medal, maybe they haven't. But ultimately, we still strive towards that. And why should it not be the same in our careers? So why do we focus on so many different things? Like, oh, I've got to read 5 articles a week. I've got to improve my communication skills. Oh, I've got to network with 30 people. And why do we do all of these different things from the core competencies of the industry? Why don't we just focus on one, smash it out of the park, move on to the next, and then just tick all the other ones, which is exactly what we did for our athletes. So I kind of put together this idea of, just periodizing your career and how you go about doing things. I suppose the real, like, I went through some real tough, challenging times with my career. I'll be honest, I ran away to India. It got so bad for me that I was so completely burnt out. I wasn't living the life that I wanted. I just buggered off to India. Lucky enough, I found a job to go and do it. But it totally changed my life. I got my mojo back for life and the industry. So I want to bring my learnings and my lessons from this wacky journey to people and give people skills and tools which aren't really taught anywhere. Mm.
And I think you're completely correct in it, as in this is not an isolated type of an individualistic situation. Like, we're all as coaches, we've definitely, if you're a coach and you're saying you've never been a little bit, even a little bit burned out, I'm not really sure if you've been coaching. I'm like, maybe. Now, it depends. I think there's obviously people that inadvertently are nearly following that periodization type of model themselves. Like, they've had either fantastic mentoring or they've caught onto it quite early. They're like, okay, look, this isn't sustainable. This needs to be adjusted. And they've improved their general environment to enable that. Do you think Has your attitude towards mentorship and that level of guidance obviously changed over the years? Or what was your original, what was your kind of early 20s, I suppose, attitude towards this?
So my early 20s, I was personal training, and I had a bit of a, I don't know what people, you use whatever phrase that you want listening to this, but I decided that I wanted to be a personal trainer, and I knew that to be the best personal trainer I could be, I wanted to start as a fitness instructor. So I got offered personal training jobs straight out the bat, but I said, no, I'll be a fitness instructor earning $9,000 a year. And then I got offered a fitness manager job, and I thought, well, that's going to make me a better personal trainer, so I'll do that. And then I'll go on to personal training, and then I knocked that out of the park. But I'd spent like nearly 3 years, instead of going straight in, I spent 3 years mapping out that exact pathway so that I could be the best that I could. And yeah, I think that there are ways that people can really structure things and build a platform for themselves and a framework, some foundations, if you like, where they can go in any direction that they want with their career. And I think it's really important that people understand that there is potential for them to do that and have the resources and the skills to do so.
Now, I think, I suppose on a slightly different tangent, well, something you mentioned earlier on actually definitely resonated. And I think it's the concept of I suppose, as many as possible for as long as possible. And one of the challenges, obviously, as coaches is we all want to try and be this superhero coach that's going to be like getting a national job or an international job or like Olympics, whatever it is, you know what I mean? And I think we all have that. The same as when we were younger, maybe we were all either wanted to play professional football or we wanted to be some Olympic athlete or whatever. Yeah. But realism kicks in quite quickly and you go, okay, that's a really, really challenging thing to do and be involved in a huge amount of serendipity also. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges is nearly a recognition that we as coaches, if we don't think we can get to that, we nearly just kind of switch off and our imposter syndrome or our phenomenon kicks in very, very hard and then we get caught. And then we nearly undersell ourselves. Whereas I think there needs to be the professionalization of our mentality definitely helps an awful lot. And I think it includes the likes of welfare, it includes the likes of our planning and our organization and I suppose, yeah, kind of identification of what exactly we want to do and what we want to be kind of known for and what kind of legacy we want, you know?
Yeah, in a very short set phrase, that's self-awareness. It's understanding what you are, but also understanding what you are not. And there's a relatively famous rugby player called Brian O'Driscoll who spoke about working on his speed and how he was desperate to get faster. I think it was the speed anyway. And he was working so hard on it that some of his other skills, the things that he was really exceptional at, like world-class at, started going downhill. And he started working with a coach. I can't remember who it was. He just said, what are you doing? Why aren't you focusing on spending extra time on your things that you're world-class at and a little bit less time on the things that you're not world-class at? Make that a real super strength and make sure that this is you know, acceptable international standard, but those other things are world class and that's how you'll progress. And then he flipped it back and went back to what he was doing, and then he just off he went again. So why should it be any different for us and our careers? But we have to have that. I believe that's kind of the role of a mentor, to help you identify your blind spots and to keep an eye on your future three years, 5 years, 10 years down the line and say, you know what, you could be shaping up for this. If you just have a look at that avenue, then you have potential X amount of years down the line to be able to spread out as you wish.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. Like, I suppose a big part of that is we do all have innate strengths as coaches. So like, regardless of what we think it is, it's like, it's our personalities, it's our delivery methods or whatever it is, or our tone of delivery. We all have our little uniqueness about us. And I think that's where sometimes we're kind of afraid to allow that to really flourish and become, like you said, a super strength. And we want to try and stay very balanced. I think that's just a general coaching attribute, kind of mentality, that we want to stay very balanced and we want to be able to cover an awful lot of bases and try and be the best at every single thing that we can, because we assume that that's what a coach needs to be, as in all of these things for all of these people. And like, well, not exactly. Like, as in, if you're quite good at something innately and your past has dictated that you act a certain way or you have a certain level of sense of humor, there's no reason not to follow that and really, really push it. But again, like you said, a healthy way of doing that is making sure that you actually be, first of all, aware of it and then plan accordingly so you can actually really embrace it correctly and safely, you know?
Yeah. And for me, this is Brett Bartholomew is the godfather on this. Bartholomew, I should pronounce it right. Yeah, he's the godfather on this stuff, really. And he's talking about social adaptability. And I'd encourage people to do some experiments. Go into one group of people and communicate in a certain way, see how you get on with that. Then a different time, try a different method, try, and then just see what comes back. See what feedback you're getting from people, the body language, the tones that you get back, the everything from what they say to what they actually go and do. And then you'll soon start to realize, yeah, okay, this is you're discovering and you're learning about yourself and your own style. And this is about professional identity and trial and error. And just fail, but fail forward and fail forward in a way that is not going to lose you your job and the respect of the people around you. But you need to experiment in order to truly understand your own philosophy and your own style. And a really great way to do that is find a safe environment to do it. If you're a uni student listening to this, there will be no other opportunity in your life where you will be prepared and willing to work for free. There won't be. As soon as you graduate, the first thing you'll be thinking is money. You'll need money. So you won't want to go and do an unpaid internship. You'll do it, but you won't want to. But if you can go and get, you know, hundreds and thousands of hours over a 3-year period clocked up within their strength conditioning world, you can define your own philosophy. You can fail and you can start to fail forward in a relatively safe environment. So that by the time you get to actually interviewing for jobs, you're thousands of hours ahead of people, which is what people are recommending and wanting, experienced practitioners out the door. So that's what I believe.
So that's an interesting kind of segue. And I was actually going to be my next question, I suppose. And so I'm re-listening and rereading to Robert Greene's Mastery. And he talks about apprenticeships, a huge, huge amount, and the value of them and the importance of them, I suppose. And so if you were to kind of go between internships versus apprenticeships, what's your kind of feel on that in general, or your general thoughts around it?
I believe, well, I don't want to get stuck into this, should they be paid, unpaid, all that jazz, because that's
okay.
I'm about solutions. I'm not about like talking about that over over. There's polarizing opinions and all the rest of it. Like, personally, I got an extreme amount of value from everything that I ever did, and it opened doors left, right and center. But I made that choice consciously. And alongside that choice, I also stated to myself that I'm not going to moan and bitch about my choice. I'm going to stand by it. So the same as if, I don't know, you choose your situation. If you decide to go out without a jacket on, it starts raining, you don't moan and bitch about the rain because you made a choice not to bring a jacket. So it's ownership. And that's why I don't buy into that and I don't get involved in that discussion. But what I will say is that they're incredibly valuable, but you can turn any situation you want into an apprenticeship. So in my first year as in Formula 2, where I am now, I'm on an apprenticeship for the first few months until I got to know the sport, the individuals, the dynamics, the environment. Right now, I'm starting up a business. I'm doing another apprenticeship. And that's the way I'm looking at it, because it's all testing, testing, testing until you're like, right, now I've got the formula, let's go. So that's kind of my view. And I'm not sitting on the fence on it. I'm just saying I deliberately do not get involved in those discussions, because there's people having them who want to have conflict and just moan about the problem. Well, yeah. I'm sat on the other side. So no. We know the problems. Let's start looking at the solutions now. And that's what I'm trying to do now. The impact of those things on someone's well-being. That's what I do now.
And I think that's the biggest part, like you mentioned there. It's coming out, so like someone like coming out of uni now and they want to get into a particular sport, they may have a mentality like, okay, look, I want to work with a premiership club, or I want to work with some really, really high level organization, which is perfectly reasonable, but no different than yourself. I have done a huge amount And I'm perfectly okay with it. I think it was formative in my coaching ability. I suppose a simple caveat. I started coaching when I was 16 in the boxing club that my parents were kind of helping out with, and we were part of and all this. So it was literally, you're thrown, my dad was like, right, look, you can help with the circuit training, thrown in front of like 15, 20 kids, like, right, let's do a circuit with them. Go 20 minutes and then we'll do some pad work and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? So, but that followed through for years and years. But it was very much a case of, like you said, forming a correct awareness of the type of training that you want to give, or the type of attitude you want to bring to each job. And for me, it was a case of, I worked in the cinema for a couple of years. And within 3 months, I got promoted to supervisor from like just normal floor stuff, purely because of my actual work ethic. So for me now, one of my core principles is work ethic. It's trying to work as hard as possible within reason. And that immediately brings all of that identification of not even necessarily your core values, because you're not going to be able to get them very, very early on. But there's definitely, you can start getting inklings of like, what kind of a coach do I want to be? What kind of a coach do I want to align myself with? And type of people and type of training that I want to align myself with, you know?
Yeah, it's really interesting. You're talking about a few articles that I've either published or I'm going to publish. One of them relates to identifying your core values and your guiding vision. So your guiding vision is like this, the most elaborate things you can think of that you want in part, as part of your life. It can be financial, non-financial. So, for example, mine would be to, I always wanted to go on a cruise. I want to go, I want to go to that place in Turkey that's got all the balloons. I want to go.
Cappadocia.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah. I want to have two kids. I'd like to own 2-3 properties. It can be financial, non-financial. I want to be respected by my peers. I'd like to publish something in the future. So those are like my visions. And then my guiding principles are things like I'm honest, I'm upfront, I'm open, I'm enthusiastic, I'm relentless, I'm kind, I'm generous, outgoing, I'm applied, like I'm an applied person. I'd rather do than kind of talk about doing. And I'm all about action. So when I combine those things together, I can look at an opportunity and I can say, okay, is this in line with my personal vision? Is it going to bring me closer to any of those things? Yes or no. And then am I going to be able to be myself within that opportunity? Yes or no. And then those decisions become a hell of a lot easier. And there's a decision-making framework that myself and John Noonan are working on, which should be coming out fairly soon, which should be quite exciting. And then the other thing I was saying was the second article is about understanding and finding your professional identity. So what sort of coach do I want to be? What do I want to be known for and respected for? And what do I want to be known for? Like, oh, he's the guy who knows about, he's the awesome weightlifter, or he's the guy who really good at conditioning. He's the rugby guy. He's the whatever guy, you name it. What do you want to be known for? And what do you want to be respected for? Like, he's got an awesome work ethic. He's like probably the most professional person I've ever come across. He's a funny guy. Like, he delivers good quality sessions. He's fun to be around. He's a good guy. So start to align those two things, your guiding principles and who you actually want to be as a coach. And you can start to decide, should I be taking this opportunity or not? And then things like, how am I approaching this conversation? And is this in line with who I am? Or am I not being true and honest to myself, which is leading me down a different path? And that's, I've been down that path, and now I'm a little bit older. I can see that I went down it, and you know, now I choose my direction. So I'm fortunate enough to have made those mistakes so that I can do that. And my goal now is to bring these things to people's forefront, to help them to identify things about themselves, and to help them to really identify who they are as a practitioner and what their vision is.
Yeah. And I think that's where a couple of things you mentioned straight away kind of kicked in there, as in, so if you're a younger coach, and there's a lot of younger coaches kind of get just forming their vision and stuff like that. But to be fair now, when we're like 21, 22 or something like that, we're coming out of university or coming out of college. Like, to be fair now, I'm 41 now. So this is like 20 odd years ago. So I'm coming out going, my head is just full of like, okay, let's go and enjoy life and let's get like be free and all this kind of stuff, which is fine. So I think now though, what you would have is is definitely a little bit more of a, well, first of all, I suppose the type of, first of all, like you said there, the opportunities are going to, that arise. If you have a formative vision and you have your guiding principles to work off, immediately, like you said, at the very, very start, you can start disseminating and going, okay, well, look, this is definitely not what I am. And that these are the only opportunities kind of available. So like there might be 5 or 10 opportunities, it might be 10 opportunities, and 2 or 3 of those are really only viable options because the rest of them are kind of sketch. You know what I mean? They're not really working along with your vision at all. They're not really, really working with your guiding principles. So it makes the decisions an awful lot easier then, and the preparation for any of these activities much, much easier. But I think that's where there can be that desperation to go, okay, well, I need to get to this point and this point and this point. I need to immediately get money straight away and stuff like that. Whereas I think things like the career blueprint and career periodization, the earlier, the better it actually can be implemented, the easier it can be for you to actually, as a young coach or even a moderately experienced coach, that can make huge, huge difference to improving your levels of progress.
It's so true. And one thing I would say straight away is that everything's a stepping stone for something else. So I love this stepping stone thinking, and everything's a stepping stone to your calling. And I feel right now, I genuinely feel that I found my calling, and my calling is performance practitioner wellness. That's my calling. And every single thing I've done has led me to this point, but I've been quite aware that there's been jobs. I'm not going to stay here forever. I'm going to milk this dry. I'm going to get every single learning opportunity I can. When I think the learning opportunities are dead, I'm going to go and look around the organization and see if there's someone else in the organization I can go and learn from, whilst I'm simultaneously engineering my exit towards my next opportunity. Then I'm going to do exactly the same. So I had a coach talk to me and say, look, I'm thinking of moving on. And I said, well, okay, why? He said, because I don't think I'm learning anything anymore. I said, well, how much time have you spent with the performance lifestyle guys? He was at an institute structure, like the performance lifestyle guys. Like, none. Why? Well, why not? These guys are going to help you to understand the athletes, what they go through, what they need, what they want, and also help you to identify things about yourself you'd never thought of. He said, oh, okay. How much time do you spend with the sports psychologist? How much time do you spend with the dietitians, the nutritionists? How much time do you spend with physios? And he went, none. He goes back, he does like another 3 months, puts himself back on an internship with these other departments. He was like, holy shit. You just opened this whole new Pandora's box. And he's cracked on. He's done another 2 or 3 years because he's now just created this huge interdisciplinary network and had learned so much, realized he'd just been scratching the surface. So yeah, you really can start to look a little bit wider if you take your blinkers off. When it's time to go, it's time to go, but you want to make sure you're going into something and maximizing your opportunities whilst you're still in a location. That's what I feel.
I completely agree. It's funny. So on the network recently, we had a guy called Owen Clarkin, and he's the lead S&C with Arsenal women's team, with the Ireland under-21s men's team and all this. And on one of the slides he put up, it was funny. It was like other jobs at the very, very bottom of all his like main priorities during the international windows, like da 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 da. All these really high level things, like get the analysis, make sure we plan all of these things, da da da. And like, this is international level soccer. At the very bottom, there's like nearly miscellaneous ball getter, cone collector, cone put downer, things like this. And you're like, look, all of that kind of stuff is naturally part of it, but there's no reason that you wouldn't be able to, like you said there, squeeze every part of whichever role you're in. If you get moved within a role to a different department or something like that, yeah, perfect. That's a great opportunity now for improving and maximizing. One of the reasons that I went out on my own recently is because I wasn't getting as challenged. And now I'm like, okay, well, now the challenge is here. And there's no shortage of learning. Believe me, every day I'm like, oh, okay, that's a little bit of a different. That's totally different.
Right.
And we're having to get to it, you know?
The first thing I would say to any practitioner, anyone whatsoever, is get a mentor. Absolutely get a mentor. But if you do not have a mentor, then I believe that you should start to mentor yourself by having an eye on your future. You can't not have an eye on your future if you're a lone ranger. Where do I want to be in 3-5 years' time?
Yep.
what can I do within my current role to support me in improving in the areas that I'm weakest in? So that's a really tough and brutal needs analysis based on what you're actually doing and who you are and what you're like. And that's quite tough to introspect like that, but it's very important if no one else is going to support you on it. Mm-hmm. But always there's this really, really important factor, which again is what I'm doing now, is keeping an eye on the impact that all of these different climbing the slippery ladder, the impact that these things have on your well-being, and how to actually create some longevity within this industry, because there's a churn and burn rate. And like I said, I think to you earlier, I don't know a single coach that's in this game for 10 plus years who hasn't either A, burn out, or B, been on the pathway to burnout somewhere. And the other thing that every coach that's got 10 years in the industry is that I don't know a single coach, there will be people listening, but I don't know any, that doesn't have their own business or hasn't gone out solo. And that's because they get fed up of what the industry does. But if we can get left of the bang and we can start to actually prepare people for these types of scenarios that we know our industry throws at us, working hours, poor pay, high expectations, limited progression opportunities, et cetera, then, you know, we have an opportunity to really take control of our own well-being and our wellness.
Yeah, and I think that's a big part of it, that, like, we're not built as humans to be extremely narrow focused. Like, we're very, very open and broad entities. Realistic, like, we're very adaptable, and we can easily adjust if need be with a bit of learning and a bit of a refocus. And we're just very organic entities. Like, so there's no point in us just becoming only this type of a coach and stay, okay, well, I have to stay with this because I want to be the absolute, absolute best. You're like, that's fine, but that doesn't necessarily make you a very rounded or very aware coach. I think there does need to be and even on that point, there needs to be a level of awareness of business and practices within any of this. So if you're periodizing, for example, for an athlete, you don't just look at only their training. You look at, okay, well, what's the level of load going on here? What's the actual timing situation? What's the actual structure of the whole year? And potentially a 4-year process. So, like, and you're going to have training sessions that are missed. How much can I actually afford equipment wise? What does it, like, all of these different things are going to have to come into the equation. And mentally, we need to come in, have that in our own consciousness whenever we're expanding to other businesses and other types of activities.
The one word that I had in my mind as you're saying that was conscious, and being conscious of where you are, what you're doing, and what it is doing for you. If the answer is, I don't know where I am, then you need to start thinking a little bit deeper. If the answer is, I don't know where I'm going, then you need to start really trying to map out what it is you want to do. If the answer is, I don't know what this is giving to me, then you want to seek out some support so people can help you identify that. And if there really is nothing there for you, then you need to start engineering your exit. So all of these things are possible, but the main point really is that you are in control. And you can maximize and optimize an opportunity, no matter how terrible you think it is. And it might just be that you need to take the blinkers off with regards to what you actually can do, because there is a hell of a lot you can do. It might be forming better or stronger relationships, bonds with players, trying to understand some tactical aspects from the coaches. It might be, you know, it could be anything you can think of. And the second thing I think of is the interesting one you mentioned. I think we spoke about it before, is breadth and depth. So if you pigeonhole yourself as one particular sport, then you don't know in 10 years time where you want to be. Like 10 years ago or 12 years ago when I started, I had no idea I was going to work for a Formula 2 racing driver. I had no idea I'd work with special forces in flipping Romania or go to India or France. I had no idea about any of this stuff, but I had an open, and all I ever wanted to do was work for a rugby club on the south coast of France. you know, that was my dream. And then, but I was open-minded enough to say, ah, okay, there's an opportunity to go abroad here, or there's an opportunity over there, there's an opportunity there, and think, well, maybe it's not all about rugby. Maybe there is more to life than just the, you know, the UK. Mm-hmm. And keeping that little bit of an open mind, or just be aware of what's kind of to your right, really, to your right and left, and that way you can build yourself a more adventurous or different, or you can look after yourself in 10 years' time.
Yeah.
You can make good decisions. I make good decisions, well, some good decisions that Josh in 10 years' time would be happy with.
Mm. So with that in mind, and with the work that you're currently doing, and I think it's fantastic work, and the Facebook group that has been kind of going recently is kicking off pretty hard. And there's some really, I think there's some very important questions being asked in there and comments being brought up. And it's just, like you mentioned earlier on, it's that psychologically safe kind of place where you can kind of just give it loads and just go, look, this is what I'm going through. This is where I'm at. This is what I'm having an issue with, and so on. And like you mentioned Brett before, like having worked with him a little bit before, it's phenomenal for that kind of a mentality of just like, look, let's get it on the table. Let's work it out. And let's try and find out exactly what the problems are, not just on a very technical level. Like, no, it might be a communication issue. It might actually be your attitude. It might be your planning issues. You know what I mean? There's all of these challenges to it. Where are you seeing at the moment, Josh, with your recent experience, the biggest problems when it comes to practitioner wellness? Is it things like burnout? Is it things like the actual planning that we're having challenges with? Where are you seeing that coaches are getting stuck at the moment?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I break wellness down into, this is me. Everyone has a different perspective on it, but I break it down into three pillars: happiness, health, and wealth, in that order. And I'm talking about wealth as more than just financial, wealth of knowledge, wealth of experiences, a wealth of relationships, et cetera, et cetera. And in all honesty, I see a lot of practitioners who aren't happy. In this group, I get at least 5 messages a day. There's about 50 people that join every day. Mm-hmm. And I started this group. I had no idea how big the problem was. In fact, I knew how big the problem was, but I didn't think there'd be so many people actually coming to the table. I've got people inviting 30 of their friends along. So they're thinking, there's 30 other people that I know that might be going through the same things as me. And we're stronger together. So it's a location for solutions. It is a location to discuss problems, but then to provide solutions. And a lot of those discussions so far have been around that. Bear in mind, like, we've barely kicked off the discussion.
Oh, yeah.
It's not even started yet. Yeah, honestly,
very much.
What's happened so far is organic. And as soon as I start putting in things that are going to actually spark a bit of discussion, you know, we're cooking on gas. But there's a real lack of happiness amongst the practitioners. And that stems from the way in which our industry gets to us. And that's because we give so much of ourselves away. Mm-hmm. We're inherently givers. We give to our athletes, and then we probably give in our social lives and our personal lives as well, which leaves a tiny little bit left for ourselves. And that's not enough. So it's a way of trying to understand how we can manage those different divisions a little bit more. The health side of things is, I wouldn't say it's physical. I'd probably say, obviously, there's tiredness in there, but we understand that side. We understand what we should and shouldn't eat. We understand that we need to train. We get that. That's our bag. That's what we do. But it's the mental and the emotional health that is really suffering, and the health of our relationships that really get a kick in the nuts. That's what really suffers. And then, look, if we talk about wealth, then, geez, where do we start? Yeah. If we're talking financial, then... Yeah. You know, where do we even start? And for that reason, I've actually just been on the phone to a guy to come into the group. When it comes to money, I've got no right to be talking about advising people on money. Mm. So because wealth is, and financial wealth is such an important part of our well-being, I've got a guy coming in who is going to be delivering content on financial wealth. He's a financial advisor, a wealth manager. So he's going to come into the group, and he's going to put his knowledge, he's going to add his content so that everybody knows it's coming from a professional standpoint. And that's a way that we can support people. We'll have webinars coming, we'll have Facebook Lives, et cetera, et cetera. And then a lot of the other content, what's coming up is, I'll tell you guys actually, because I was just on a podcast yesterday and talking about it. So the first product which I'm launching is called the Reflective Practitioner's Journal. Now that is solely based around giving practitioners the skills to take control of their happiness, health and wealth and reflect on those on a daily basis. So micro, meso and macro, daily, weekly, monthly. It's a 12-week hard copy journal. And within that, once a week, there'll be exercises that are called the Happy Practitioner exercises, which are going to be based around things like understanding your guiding principles, identifying your professional vision, trying to engage with who your anchors are in your life, like what your professional and personal anchors are and how you can go about cutting those away. And it's a way and a method for you to really be present every day in and bring those things to the forefront of your mind. Because as we all know, the energy flows where the attention goes. And then the follow-on products from that, I don't think I've mentioned this to anybody, but there will be a bunch of short courses coming out, which are specific and bespoke for elements of well-being. For example, practitioners who are parents, practitioners who travel with their jobs, practitioners, how to give employers and managers the skills to manage their staff, to promote their staff's well-being. What can you do? Mm-hmm. All sorts of things, habit forming, managing difficult relationships in the workplace, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I'm not here to stand on people's toes like Brett Bartholomew. I'm not gonna go and stand on his toes. I'm here to look after performance practitioners. I'm here to deliver content and resources and materials which give practitioners the control of their work-life balance and their professional personal pathway.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things on that straight away. And I think, again, those resources are going to be fantastic because they're very, very important. I do think, though, like that's where even like mentioning the likes of Brett and stuff like that, I still think that there's huge amounts of space for all of us. I think as long as it's done in a respectful, authentic kind of way, not authentic necessarily, but like it's authentic because it's Josh's ideology. Like, you know what I mean? So you have a very different, unique perspective on it. So you're going to have natural adjustments and natural differences in the likes of that anyway. So obviously, notwithstanding the respectful legal boundaries and all this kind of stuff, of course we'd have to be reasonable about that, but I think there's a ton of space for all these types of ideas and all those types of ones, because your perspective is going to resonate with some people and other people it's definitely not going to resonate with. But you can't really worry about them because you're not going to try and convince them, you know what I mean? You can only help the people that want to be helped and the ones that are going to be able to. You're definitely going to be able to get some traction then because they actually believe that you could be helpful to them, you know what I mean? Rather than just like, oh, no, I'm just shouting at this. Like, yeah. It's just a waste of time.
If looking after your well-being is important to you, it's your cup of tea, then come and have a look around. And we're there without judgment. You're welcome into the group without judgment. And my pathway, I'm not looking to compete with anyone. In fact, I'm collaborating. I have 6 different collaborators already on board, one of which is Sam Portland. And I also have another collaboration with John Noonan. He probably won't mind me throwing it out there already. Puts a bit of pressure on us to get it done. And I have another 4 dropping soon. All of these people are, in my opinion, smarter and held in incredibly high esteem within our industry. Every single person would have heard of them. And the reason why I'm collaborating with those guys is because they're subject matter experts. So I'm going out and I'm finding subject matter experts to bring the correct resources and materials to people's doorstep. For me, that's very important. I want a high quality of information. I'm not interested in putting posts out about eat 7 fruit and veg a day and you know, all the standard things that we know about. We get that. And I'm interested in creating resources that are going to give people the skills to apply things. I'm all about applied, and it's the how that I'm like genuinely focused on is the how. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah. And I think there's one small thing that you mentioned earlier on that definitely, I think it's quite important, as in it's just that mentality of the amateur versus the professional mentality about it. Like if you're an amateur, you're very reactionary and you're going to be kind of popping around between different things. And if you know what I mean, with the likes of, potentially we say something like time management, or if there is extra stress that's getting to you, you know what I mean? And there's stuff always getting in your way, that there's definitely a notion there of like, okay, well, look, are you actually organizing yourself here? What's the story? Like, are you planning correctly? Are you putting the environment in place? Are you being a professional about it? You know what I mean? Rather than just being an amateur and just kind of being really reactionary and messy. It's a huge, huge challenge, you know?
Yeah, you're dead right. And the average age in that group, there's some really, really, really huge name practitioners coming in now.
Yeah.
And I don't need to name drop. People can just come and have a look. But there's some really big name practitioners coming in. And the average age, I had a look through and I was like, geez, the average age is about 28, 29. And that's massively dragged down by the students. These guys have got years and years in the bank. Mm. And there's thousands, thousands of years of experience in that group. And the vast majority from the 20, 28 plus or 25 plus, they've experienced some of these really negative impacts that our industry can throw at you on their well-being. And they're putting their hands up and saying, no, not anymore. It's too long. It's been too long with our wellness and our well-being being an afterthought. Mm. It's been too long with employers and managers not having my interests at heart and only looking out for themselves in the club or the organization. And that's why I'm providing resources for organization level, all the way through, so organization, club level, institute level, all the way down to an individual. So an individual can come along and engage, or an organization can come along and engage, and the staff of or the managers, the employers, can begin to understand, okay, I've got a 20 grand budget for, I don't know, Danny to for a practitioner to come in. Mm-hmm. I can't get any more money. What can I do? Here's some ideas, here's some resources, here's some tools you can use in order to promote this. Here's some methods that you could potentially access funds from XYZ location, which can allow you to do this, 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 this. Mm. So I'm trying to take the blinkers off so that, you know, for an employer or a manager, everybody knows that healthy, happy workers work harder. So why not create healthy, happy workers, create some longevity for that member of staff and actually give them something to want to remain where they are?
Yeah. I think that's a very important part, because as the industry or profession kind of evolves, and you know this as well as anybody, as the age groups, as we just go through the years, like those people who may be a bit on the old, more old school kind of a vibe, they're essentially moving on. So there's going to be a natural progression throughout. So we want to empower these people, all of these younger or middle-aged people, whatever it is, that are up and coming. And now, like you said, have this huge amount of experience. Right. Well, what are we doing with this experience? Like, are we actually going to improve the profession or the industry? Or are we just going to kind of be the same BS as before? You know, there's lots and lots of opportunity and lots of, especially like you said at the start, lots of awareness that this is a significant challenge. So there has to be ways of empowering us to improve it.
Yeah. And for me, it comes back to the same old statement: what can you do to take control? And I look at it as there's the job and there's the person. So the job, you want results, you got to perform. No, that's as simple as that.
Yeah.
But then there's the person behind that, and what can that person tolerate? Who is that individual? How do you get to know them? How do they get to know themselves? How do you support them? How do you understand what they're going through in their life? How do you get to know this person so that you can be a better manager, a staff, a colleague, that you can support them and provide what they need in order to have better happiness, health and wealth within the workplace? Like what can you do? And there's so many different things, but people just need to kind of take their blinkers off a little bit. And that's a little bit about what this, the Facebook group, what we're doing right now, this is the start. Like we're, you know, it's crawl, walk, run, and we're less than crawling. We're not even able to roll over at the moment, but in 2 weeks, the group has gone, the Facebook group's gone up to like 450, and there's probably around 50 ad coming per day now. So it's growing pretty quick. So that's going to be the central location point where I'm going to be providing all the information about upcoming launches and products. And that's going to be the central focus point for education. And there's a lot of There is already a lot of free content in there, but there'll be even more from webinars from different practitioners and different professionals. So I'm very keen to get professionals that I know, like, and trust involved, because they are subject matter experts in particular areas. So I want them to come in and add value because they know more than me. And I'm quite open and honest about that.
Yeah, I think that's very important, that there is definitely an awareness that this is not a one man job, because it's such a diverse topic and such a big topic. But I think it's because it has such far reaching impact that it requires a certain adjustment towards making sure that it can be a professional mentality as well. Because if we're going to try and improve the entire industry, or at least the entire health and wealth, like you said, and happiness of the actual practitioners here, then we want to be able to get as much knowledge, and I suppose definitely a little bit more empathy, that a lot of these people are going through all of these issues as well. And they're not just living up on this kind of, you know, high mountain, and they're just living in the clouds. Like, you know, this is a real situation that a lot of these people are going through, because we're all humans at the end of the day, and we end up having these challenges. And it's really, really important, I think, for us to be able to empathize with their challenging journeys, or parts of their journey as well, from, like you said, subject matter experts that we can really easily apply. I think that's, like you said, the biggest thing is that we can apply these lessons. A simple example, I joined another Facebook group the other day, and immediately they have a lot of different little resources that I'm like, why the fuck didn't I just join this ages ago? Damn it. It's actually a really handy little Facebook group. And immediately now it's given me more content to utilize, or at least more ideas to go, okay, do you know what? I can structure this a certain way. And like you said there, if it's the application is something we all want. But I think when we can see the difference in our own lives by, be it the planning, be it the happiness factor improving, be it the relationships improving, like, that makes a huge, huge difference to how we can impact on other people.
Yeah, you're dead right. One of the biggest things for me is about priorities, like, where are we putting our time, energy and resources, money. I thought about this in terms of agendas, like what my priorities are for a particular day. I did this with my girlfriend the other day. I asked her what her priorities were for Monday, and this was on Sunday night. And she came out with three, which were completely different to my three. Mm. And then I said, what do you think our son's priorities are tomorrow?
Yeah.
He's 2 years old. And I thought his priority is to get some love from mum, get some love from dad, and probably eat some dirt off the floor or something.
Pretty much.
And none of them were aligned. Absolutely none. And that was on Sunday. And I've worked really, really, really hard. I've been really conscious this week of trying to make sure that each one of those other people in my world is, I've tried to make it less selfish. I've tried to make it less about me and more about, okay, I've got my slots of time here, my pockets of time. That's for that. When I'm here, I'm trying to focus on their well-being and their priorities as well. Yeah, I mean, it's...
I think that's a big thing, though, and we'll leave you after this in a second, Josh. But I think that's an important one, as in, we can't do our jobs without a huge support structure, or a really, really strong support structure. And I think it's very important that I'm sure both myself and yourself, we've had hugely supportive, be it partners or families or friends or work colleagues or whatever it is, that have definitely pulled us back from the brink on regular occasions. Because we just end up getting wound up in our own heads about it, and lacking confidence and lacking clarity about exactly how we should be approaching things. But I think that's where prioritization of a lot of time we as coaches obviously can get wound up in the fact that, okay, we love the job and we love the activity of sport or performance or whatever it is. And it just needs to be a case of, like, okay, well, you can't bring any of that with you. Like, you can, but you have to leave some level of a legacy. And, like, the real life legacy is, okay, well, have you actually had good relationships, be it with the players, be it with your family, be it with whatever it is? And people are going to definitely remember an awful lot more how you made them feel, and exactly some of the kind of funny anecdotes, than any of the actual goals or fucking, you know, data points and bits and pieces like this.
You're dead right. It's really rare that you go, that you move on and then anyone's still talking about you. It's the reality, and you might have done a great job, but ultimately, you know, you move on. The only thing you can really hope for is that people respect you and know, like, and trust you, I guess. But ultimately, you want to go about your business in the best possible way you can, but you've got to look after number one. And you can look after number one and still do a good job. In fact, you'll probably do a better job if you look after number one. But what a lot of people don't really get is how to do that, and what the practical applications are, practical skills that you need in order to do that. And again, that's what I'm dedicating my sole purpose of my business is to give individuals those skills. Because I certainly didn't have them. I had to learn them all myself, and it took me years and lost bloody half my head of hair doing it. So I'm here to try and keep some hair on people's heads. I'm here to make people happier, healthier, and you know, potentially for their pockets not to be quite as empty. And that's why I'm bringing people in to this community, and I'm bringing people in to try to do that. So the engagement is absolutely critical. We're stronger together. If we talk about it, it really helps to show people. I put a post out on World Mental Health Day, and just said, look, like, basically we're here. Put your hands up if you lend an ear for someone who's struggling. There's about 20-30 people. Yep, I'm here, happy to help anyone who ever wants to talk. I'm here. That's 20-30 people, and there was only about 120. There's only about 200 people in the group at that point. So, and there was about, you know, another 50 likes, which basically indicates there's 70 odd people willing to talk to anyone who needs anyone. So, that's what we're all about there.
Yeah, and I think and I'm looking forward to the future of it. It's providing an absolutely valuable, like a massive value service and an important place for people to definitely be able to get some of those details and resources that they can actually really apply quite quickly. And like you said, there's a lot of things straight away there that I'm like, I could easily do that. I can just get a notebook out now and get stuck into it straight away, you know, and there's no reason not to. And it's only going to be a positive in that context, because you are making sure that you're making those choices to empower your direction or your attitude towards things, or even like you mentioned about the journaling situation, like you're just analyzing and critically analyzing, be it your own thoughts that definitely get wild sometimes and get wound up in certain ways. But so I'm going to leave you for the moment, Josh, but I have one question. So I've changed my question. I used to ask like, oh, have you got a favorite book and all this kind of BS? And I'm not going to go with that now. But I've always been interested in finding out who people's favorite coaches are. And who's either the up and coming cool coach that you think is going to be like, is currently a current or future badass, or who's some of the old school coaches that you would have had back in the day that is kind of underrated and we need to bring back to the limelight?
I've been kind of fortunate enough, especially in the EIS days, to see a hell of a lot of different practitioners. And now I kind of rub shoulders with a few different guys. So right now I'd probably turn my attentions to people like John Noonan, who's got a great balance of understanding the body and how it works and putting it all together, and then the communication and really living by the values that he preaches. So I've got a lot of time and a lot of respect for him. I really like the messages that Brett Bartholomew puts out. That goes without saying, he's the godfather. And then from the old days, I mean, I used to love the energy of somebody like Neil Parsley. I used to work with him at EIS, and he was just full of beans all the time. No matter how goosed he was, he had three kids and he was running around like a blue ass fly, driving around from Liverpool to Manchester in this shitty blue polo car full of shit because he was just so busy all the time. But he does what he loves now. And he was foot down creating. He was an innovator. I got my mind blown by a couple of different practitioners early in my career. I've never told them this, and I should do really. Danny Holcroft and actually Katie James. I was looking after a couple of their athletes, and they sent me a program, and I just delivered it to the letter, like literally kilo by kilo. I delivered it, and the results I saw were absolutely unbelievable. And I literally was doing nothing but technique and loading up bars, emptying bars. And that taught me so much about more about programming than I did programming for my athletes in like 2 years. So I'm indebted to those guys. Duncan French, actually, he did exactly the same thing. And I had a really cool time with him. I really enjoyed working alongside him at EIS. And pretty much ever since then, I've been a bit of a lone ranger, really. So now the communication I have with people is via social media and actually getting in touch with people. I also have a lot of respect for Dan House, who's still at the pointy end of the spear, traveling all around the world, and just got that really great mix of applied and kind of science as well. So yeah, those are my go-to guys, and you'll find them all on social media.
And that's, to be fair, that's a pretty legit list. Like I always love talking to coaches who've had such good be it fellow coaches that they've been able to learn from. And like you said, even if you didn't necessarily, even if we didn't have very formal mentors, there's definitely a lot of like interesting little mentors that were inadvertent mentors that you don't need to know.
One of the biggest mentors I ever had was a rugby coach. I'll never mention this person's name, but that was the absolute antithesis of what not to do, how not to be as a human, how not to be as a communicator, how not to be as a coach. And I will stand by that till the day I die, that is what I want to avoid, like the plague. Yeah. So I learned as much from that as I did from any of those other situations I'm describing.
Yeah, super. Good stuff. Excellent, Josh. So where can people find out more about yourself, the career blueprints, periodization, the whole lot? Go for it.
On Facebook, it's the Practitioner Wellbeing, Performance Practitioner Wellbeing, it's called. Get that right. Performance Practitioner Wellbeing. So that's the Facebook group. And then Instagram would be at Career Blueprint. Twitter is at Coach Blueprint 1, because Career Blueprint was taken. And then the website is currently having a bit of work done to it, but that would be www.yourcareer-blueprint.com.
Nice. So people can kind of touch base with you on that. And I, having experienced just recently the Facebook group and some of your work, it's phenomenal stuff. I'd recommend anybody to get stuck into it. I think it's going to be a great one. I'm going to definitely use a lot of the tools and avenues involved in it. It's going to be really, really cool. Josh, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast. I really appreciate you taking the time, man. And we'll chat to you very, very soon.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, folks. So you've just been listening to episode number 1 of our new Coach Welfare series with the excellent Josh Fletcher. So first of all, guys, I want to say a massive thank you to Josh for taking the time to join me today. It was a really, really great conversation, and I'm sure you guys got as much out of it as I did. Hopefully you did. If you'd like to check out any of the previous podcast episodes, you can find us on our home base of podbean.com. Alternatively, you can find us on Spotify or iTunes, pretty much wherever else you get your podcasts. Folks, I'm really looking forward to bringing some really good guests over the next few weeks to the Coach Welfare series, and I hope you guys will join me on that. Thanks again, folks, for tuning in, and chat to you very soon.